Straight Up with No Chaser. You're in the sports bar with Danger and Battaglia on the Sports Leader, 95.7 FM and AM 950 The Fan, Rochester.
Let's get back to talking Buffalo Bills as they prepare for Monday night game against Jacksonville in Orchard Park. Jacksonville coming in desperate at 0-2. The Bills, AFC East leaders at 2-0. Sal Capaccio will be patrolling the sidelines on Monday night. You can hear him on our Odyssey Sports sister station, WGR, as well. I think it'd be real easy, Sal, for people to be down on the Bills' defensive side of the ball, given all the injuries that they've sustained. Yet we have guys stepping up. This whole next man up has been working for Sean McDermott and Bobby Babich. Talk a little bit about what we might see out of guys like Cam Lewis, who we've seen now in two games, out of guys like Jamarcus Ingram, who obviously had the game of his life in Miami, and Baylen Specter, who gets a start, we would imagine, here coming up on Monday night.
Yeah, it just seems like every week it's someone new, right? I mean, we started off with Matt Milano and what happened with him and Dorian Williams filling in, and then Taron Johnson gets hurt and Cam has to shift from the dime safety to nickel back, so that puts Jamarcus Ingram at the dime safety, and now Baylen Specter's got to fill in for Terrell Bernard, all those names you said. And I think really this is a bigger picture for me, guys, which is because the Bills have such continuity with their front office and their head coach, between their GM and his staff and the head coach, you know, what Brandon Bean's been able to do is pretty much been able to draft and sign undrafted free agents for not only the short term but the long term. These guys have all developed. They've been in the system. You know, Jamarcus Ingram's been here for 3 years. Cam Lewis has been here 6 years. Baylen Specter, this is his third year. Dorian Williams, second year. You know, if you're changing head coaches and philosophies and schemes every other year, you could try to develop a guy for 2 years and they're like, it doesn't fit what we do anymore. And then you got to start over. So I think the Bills have really put themselves in a position where it shouldn't be much of a surprise for fans to see these guys step up and play well, because they've been developing and playing in these systems and with these guys, with these coaches, for the last several years.
One thing that helps out, Sal, too, is for those guys on the back end and in that Miami game, I mean, the Bills hardly blitzed. What was it, twice in that game? I mean, the idea that you could get pressure with just four, get the job done with just four. And if I could start out asking what you're seeing here out of, you know, the two bookends here, if you will, Gregory Rousseau. Seems like when you have that, it seems like everything else can kind of fall into place.
Well, that's a defensive coordinator's dream. I mean, everybody wants that. Everybody wants to get pressure with four and not have to blitz. And the Bills have been able to do that through two games, and Greg Rousseau is really turning into a upper echelon pass rusher in this league, to go along with the fact that he's already a really terrific, edge setter against the run. Von Miller looks like Von Miller of old, I guess. I don't know, maybe not, peak Von Miller winning MVPs of the Super Bowl, but he looks very similar to what he did for the first part of when he got here a couple of years ago. And how sustainable is that? You hope it is. He is older, but they're not asking him to play 90% of the snaps, and that helps a lot, guys. I mean, he's on the field. They're taking care of his body and on the field where he needs to be. You know what's really going to help, too, with all this happening? Dewan Smoot comes back this week, most likely. Dewan Smoot is a guy that had like six and a half sacks with the Jacksonville Jaguars each of the last several years. I think last year he didn't, but pretty much for the most part of his career there. And he's a guy that they can put outside, inside, and they really love his versatility. That's going to help the defensive line even more. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, when you can get that pressure, of course it's going to help on the back end, but every team wants to get that pressure. The Bills are the ones, they are getting it right now.
And Sal, let's talk about that back end, because I think that was a question going into week one when you had Taylor Rapp back there and you had to start Damar Hamlin. We got to see a little bit of Cole Bishop in garbage time against Miami, and they're getting healthier. Do you expect that it will continue to be Rapp and Hamlin until there's a reason to make a change? Will there be a reason to make a change?
Well, I guess until they give you a reason, you don't do it, right? I mean, so far, so good through two games. Rapp and Damar Hamlin have been a part of a secondary that in game one against the Arizona Cardinals, even though they were down 17-3, they pretty much shut down a very high-powered, talented offense in the second half. Didn't allow any big plays. Look at Marvin Harrison Jr., what they did to him in week one compared to what he did in week two against the LA Rams. They did a nice job of, on defense overall as a package, but I think on the back end of just making sure that everything stayed in front of them. And then last week, how could you complain about anything there, right? They did the same thing. So, look, I understand fans' trepidation and concerns when they see, Damar Hamlin starting back there. Damar Hamlin has been, again, another guy. He's been here 4 years. He knows this system as well as or better than anybody, certainly better than Cole Bishop or Mike Edwards, who just got here. those guys might be better talented players, and at some point you might need them on the field, and maybe they do replace DeMar Hamlin. You're not replacing Taylor Rapp. He's a safety that they're going to rely on. He's going to be the guy. But, you know, if they feel that they need a little more athleticism back there, then sure, they will go with those guys. But right now, DeMar Hamlin's doing everything coached of him and asked of him to do, guys.
We're talking to Sal Capaccio. You'll hear him on the sideline coming up Monday night with Buffalo and Jacksonville. Sal with WGR in Buffalo. Sal is, and again, it's another game where you're facing an opponent like, oh, I remember Jordan Poyer with the Bills, and now you get two ex-Buffalo Bills. You have Gabe Davis and Mitch Morse, and a lot of people are upset about Mitch Morse leaving there because, well, you had this continuity and you had this great offensive line, and granted, it's early in the season, but what are your thoughts here on this revamped offensive line with the Buffalo Bills, because, heck, if James Cook is getting named the AFC Offensive Player of the Week, well, I'm sure that a lot of the credit has to go to the guys that were blocking up front for him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is no disrespect at all to Mitch Morse. He was a fantastic player for the Bills. He was one of their team leaders. He did a great job snapping the ball to Josh Allen, and he was athletic and could get out. But I think the Bills felt really good about having Connor McGovern step in for him. And when it first happened, people questioned it a lot, and boy, he's never really played that in the NFL. Let's remember, Connor McGovern was the number one rated high school center coming out in America when he came out of high school. And I know he didn't play that. You know, he played it immediately in college, and then he shifted, and he really hasn't played it in the NFL. But he's always said he prefers center. He thinks it's his best position. And I don't think the Bills have really kind of missed a beat there yet. And then, of course, next to him, David Edwards, question there. But David Edwards started for the LA Rams a few years ago in a Super Bowl season. He started every game for them. It's a guy that they very much, you know, believe in. And then Osiris Torrance on the right side, who played every single snap as a rookie. And we know how the Bills feel about their tackles. They both recently got extensions, right? Deion Dawkins and Spencer Brown. They've done a really nice job. I also think that having a guy like Ray Davis behind James Cook helps a lot. This is a guy that can come in. He can spell James Cook. He gets some of the tough yards. He can run between the tackles. And the Bills have, like a lot of teams, like you guys see what's happening in the NFL. Scoring's down. Passing's down. The Bills have kind of been, to me, a little bit on the forefront of this movement that's happening here, which is you don't have to throw the ball 60 yards down the field to score. You can throw it 5 yards and have your guy run, or you can hit it off into a light box and have him gain 6 yards and make it 2nd and 4. And I think the Bills thought about this and have been kind of trending towards this, and now it's finally kind of coming to fruition.
Yeah, I guess when you look at defenses around the NFL, Sal, and you look at this through the jeweler's eye, you can kind of see that defenses have gotten smaller in the middle, in the second and third level of the defense, and maybe that's part of it. If you can win that line of scrimmage and maul up front in the run game, that, you know, the secondary and the linebackers just aren't as big as they used to be, your running backs could probably mow them over.
I've been talking about it for years. It's happening. It happens every 6, 7 to 10 years. You have football is very cyclical, very cyclical. And it's exactly what's happening. And you're seeing now so many more teams are playing not only nickel defense, but dime defense. And they're lighter. They're putting 60 DBs on the field, so you can't beat them via the pass. So teams are like, okay, we'll just run at you then. And middle linebackers have gone from the Ray Lewis types of the early 2000s, who obviously could do anything anyway, but his size, to guys like Terrell Bernard that you see. Everybody says Terrell Bernard's undersized. Kind of really isn't for today's NFL, right? I mean, like, he's a guy that's what you see in middle linebackers. But what's happening is teams are like, okay, well, then we're going to run straight at that guy, and we're going to force him to make some plays. Look, I mean, the Bills have been subject to this too and against them. Last year in the playoffs, Kansas City did a great job of running 3 tight ends at the Bills' nickel defense, and they were very successful running the football. So it's a cat and mouse game. It's chicken and egg, whatever cliche you want to use, but it's cyclical. This is what's happening, and rosters are built like this. And again, I'll go back to the point I made earlier, guys, which is if you have a GM and a head coach who are together and on the same page, you can have the vision and build your roster like that, and then you can marry it to each other instead of having to start over every couple years.
Sal, the Bills and Jaguars, and this is an opponent. I guess every opponent, you could find reasons why this will be a tough matchup. But, I mean, recent history, this hasn't gone well for the Bills. The game in London, the loss to Urban Meyer, and it's a Jaguar team that, all right, not too often you get a team going 0-3 and then makes it to the postseason. So they have this sense of urgency. How do the Bills match up in this game, do you feel?
Yeah, look, I understand that when you see the Jags logo, it does kind of make everybody remind them of, 2017, breaking the drought. You go down there, you lose 10-3 to Doug Marrone. And then you lose to Urban Meyer. Oh, my God, how did that happen, right? Whatever, 9-6, whatever that game was, last year in London. I get all that. I don't buy any of it. I think that this is not – the names change, the coaches change, the philosophies change. Yes, are they similar to last year? Of course they are. What the Bills did in 2019 against Urban Meyer has nothing to do in 2024. It's not to me like it is with the Miami Dolphins, where you play them twice a year. The coaches and the players are very similar, and you have these kind of, you very much get to know each other. Now, that said, I do think there's scar tissue there for a lot of fans. I totally get it from their perspective. I also say that Jacksonville's a good team. They're talented. I know they're 0-2, but they have Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne, and obviously Gabe Davis is there. I think a big loss for them would be Evan Engram. If he doesn't play, we'll find out. He hurt his hamstring before last game. What I worry about in this game, guys, is two things. Number one, this is a team that will be absolutely desperate. They will have a huge sense of urgency all week at practice coming into this game. They cannot go 0-3 to start their season. As well as on the field, as much as Dorian Williams and Baylen Spector have done a nice job filling in, they're both like C-ball, get-ball kind of linebackers. They're not the greatest cover linebackers. I would worry a little bit this week that the Jags could attack that area, the Bills' coverage, by their linebackers. But the Bills know that. They'll have a plan for that. And they have, you know, a full week to prepare for that. So that's where I think the matchup lies there. On the other side of the ball, I think the Bills' front seven can get after the Jags, as we talked about earlier. I think Trevor Lawrence, for whatever reason right now, has not off to a good start. It seems like, you know, he's not getting the ball really to his weapons that they want to get him to. And if they don't have Evan Engram, that's going to be a significant blow.
Sal, let's focus in a little bit on Baylen Spector. We talked about him, kind of in passing there at the beginning. But, I mean, to come in for Bernard, to call the defense in a win against Miami, to have a little bit of extra time here to prepare to start on Monday night. Talk about the player in Baylen Spector. You know, we know he's been here for a few years. We know that last year during training camp, there was talk that maybe he was the guy that would replace Tremaine Edmonds before Bernard did what he did. The player, what's he matured and developed into here as he gets his start on Monday night?
You know, the biggest issue with Baylen Spector has been his health so far. He's a guy that's had injuries, and he hasn't been able to kind of sustain staying on the field and being that true backup middle linebacker. He is very flexible. He can play Will. He can play Mike. That's where he started. He started at the Will. He moved to the Mike, or maybe he did both, either way. But he's played both positions. The Bills like to have that flexibility with all their linebackers. But he's played both spots. And I think he's really grown into a guy that's comfortable in the system. He understands the system. This is his third year. Let's remember, last year against the Pittsburgh Steelers, when the Bills played them in the playoffs, Baylen Spector actually started that game. And he was a guy that they were trusting on the field. He got hurt in that game, and that's when they had to make a change again. And, you know, we all know what happened. They had to go to A.J. Klein eventually against the Kansas City Chiefs. The Bills like Baylen Spector, like him as a player. If it hasn't been for the injuries, I think that, you know, there would be even – he'd be even on a maybe higher trajectory, meaning maybe he would have developed even quicker than he has so far. That's been the biggest knock on him so far and the biggest issue with him so far. But, again, see ball, get ball kind of guy, tackling machine. When he diagnoses and he sees where the ball is, he's going after it and he's going to get it.
Sal Capaccio, our guest here in the Sports Bar. Sal, what kind of guy is Tyler Bass? I mean, it seems kind of, it's a cruel business, right? Like, we're trying out other guys just in case. And I don't know what, you know, Sean McDermott could have said more today. But, and, you know, the only answer here for Tyler Bass is, I suppose, is, hey, you know, make kicks and we forget about this here in a month. But I realized today, like, I don't really know too much about the makeup of Tyler Bass. And just kind of, you know, kind of looking to you to kind of shed some light on this whole storyline here, and is this something you think the young man can work himself out of?
Fantastic young man off the field. You know, just very, very down to earth. Seems very compassionate. You know, I mean, he has this foundation for the cats. I think you guys saw last year that he supports, and, you know, when all that thing went viral last year after he missed the kick. You know, I think he's a tough kicker. You know, he came in with wearing the one eye black, right? He's a little bit different. I mean, a lot of kickers are. He's a little bit different. But it is a business. You're right. And he's got to produce. And he's got to perform. And he struggled last year. And then he struggled this year during training camp. And he was good in preseason. And then he missed the final kick in preseason. was good through the first several regular season kicks, looked very good in week one, I thought, confident. Then he missed that kick pretty badly last week. Now, it is not a coincidence that they're bringing in kickers right now to work about, no doubt, right? Obviously, he's probably not seeing that if he doesn't have his struggles. But I do want to point out to everybody, this is commonplace to bring people in at different positions throughout the year. Because what happens is, teams bring in guys for workouts, even at positions they don't have a need on right now, because if something does happen a month from now, 6-8 weeks from now, you get a baseline knowledge of people you brought into your building to give a workout to and say, we got that guy at speed dial, we could just give him a call. So this is not abnormal to have guys coming in and working out, but I'm also not going to be naive enough to tell you that, you know, it's not coincidence they're bringing in kickers after the struggles Tyler Bass has had.
Sal, we are so spoiled that we've had you on for this long, and we haven't even mentioned Josh Allen.
No.
We haven't talked about the quarterback play. We haven't needed Josh Allen to play, really. So, I mean, he was great in week one, don't get us wrong. I mean, and we, you know, he put on the cape, and he kind of guided the Bills to a victory, which makes you believe that they could never lose if Josh Allen's being that hero. But talk a little bit about the offense, what we've seen. I don't think Khalil Shakir has a drop yet this season. I think he's hauled in all of his targets, if I'm not mistaken. The offense just seems to be efficient. And in a game like we saw on Monday, where I'm sorry, last Thursday, I should say, where Josh Allen didn't have to do much and kind of, man, it's subtle, but there are moments where you're like, oh, he really is just taking what the defense is giving him.
Yeah, I mean, look, in week one, you're right. He did put on the cape and became the hero. I didn't think he had to. I just think he did because that's what Josh Allen does. The Bills actually played really well on offense that day. They were moving the ball. They're averaging 7 yards of carry in the first half. They just kept shooting themselves in the foot. And they'd have a penalty. They had a penalty call back a Josh Allen touchdown. They had the sack and fumble early on. But Josh saw an opportunity to take advantage of a play, and he made it. And he jumped over Buda Baker, and we all see it. So, yes, I agree with you. That's what he did. He became Josh Allen Superman. But I don't think he had to play necessarily hero ball for them to win that game. And then he has the hurt hand. He gets the net last week. He's got the glove on. They're trying to keep him the minimum exposure there. And it was the perfect scenario, guys. I mean, the running game just did so well. The defense did so well. They didn't have to have Josh Allen, you know, didn't ask him to do much. Just hand the ball off, make a couple of throws, keep him on schedule, and, you know, win the game. And that's what they did. The one pass he made to Ty Johnson, it was right in front of me when he scrambled out, went to his right, and then fired it downfield. It was incredible. I mean, there are really only a couple of human beings on the planet, I think, that make that play. I don't think, you know, from the vantage point of TV, people could really see how great of a play that was. For him to be scrambling where he was to get to the spot on the field and then to lead Ty Johnson over to the goal line on that pass. But he's a special, special player. Today he still had the left hand with a glove on it, and he still had the tape of the fingers, the middle and the ring finger. So he's obviously still dealing with the hand injury, but it didn't compromise him in any way. At least we didn't see on Thursday night, and he has been a full participant. And, you know, obviously he's going to play, and you wonder if he's still going to, you know, have the glove on all week and play with it again on Monday night. We still have some time here for that.
Yeah, Sal, I know the WGR studios are up in Amherst, and I don't know if you're downtown all of them, but if you were, have you seen the billboard yet? I mean, they're going to have to give it a permit here, right? I mean, that has got to give every Bills fan just a kind of a little extra pep in their step seeing that Josh Allen on the Statler building in downtown.
So I saw it for the first time maybe an hour ago, driving back from the stadium, coming home. I live in the city. And I didn't see the whole thing even. It was kind of blocked out by other buildings, but I saw it. It's so big. I saw the top of it right there. It's pretty cool to have that. I remember going to Cleveland and seeing that LeBron one when LeBron had his on a side of a building. And it's just cool to have that. It's cool to have that national recognition for that type of player. And again, here he is in the MVP conversation. He will be probably, you know, all season long. As far as permits and things like that, I don't get involved in that. I don't know. I mean, whatever people got to do to keep it up would be great, but, you know, that's out of my realm.
Sal, really appreciate you taking some time for us and giving us the latest from Orchard Park. Appreciate the work that you're giving us as well, your recaps at thefanrochester.com, and, of course, on the sidelines on game day. We'll be listening for you Monday night.
You guys got it. Thanks.
You got it. Sal Capaccio, WGR, Buffalo Bills sideline reporter, joining us here in the sports bar.
I remember I was in San Francisco when Steve Young won the Super Bowl that year, and it was a big deal because, like, for those years, Montana, 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 and then handing it off to the backup, and everybody realized, oh, he's really good. They put up this huge Nike billboard downtown San Francisco in the square there, and for every touchdown he had, they did like a little chalk thing, 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, and then you cross.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so when you have a figure that you can put up a billboard, but it doesn't come off as an ad. I'm glad Sal brought up the example of LeBron. I mean, I don't know if we ever had anything like this in Western New York, or if we ever will again. Like, we don't, we're so caught up in the minutiae of the Buffalo Bills, talking about, oh my gosh, when do you get Bishop back in there? What about the kicker? And all these details. But the A number one important thing, you have one of the best in the game today.
We're spoiled. Yeah. We're absolutely spoiled that we have Joe. I mean, we're on with Sal for a good 12, 15 minutes without even mentioning the quarterback play. You're any other team in the NFL, almost any other team in the NFL, it's the first thing you're saying. What's wrong with our quarterback? Why can't our quarterback do this? What's wrong with the line? Why would protect, whatever it is? You don't have that issue with Josh Allen, and you hope that the offensive line stays healthy. They're mauling. They're absolutely mauling through 2 weeks. And I do think that there is something to what we were discussing. The NFL kind of changing and shifting, the plate tectonic shifting, and you see linebackers being smaller than what we, you know, we think. I think of linebackers, I think of Patrick Willis and Ray Lewis and Brian Urlacher and even Tremaine Edmonds, right? Like big, physical guys that just look imposing. And the reality is most linebackers now in the NBA are smaller guys. They're just they're guys like Matt Milano and Terrell Bernard.
Yeah, because you got to cover tight ends. You got to, like, there's so much going on there, and now you're going to be facing a lot of nickel sets. Why not pound the ball here? And look, we like to make fun of complementary football, and this is what McDermott wants and everything else like that. It's just enjoyable when you can win a game physically like that. And we didn't see it for a long time here. But then it happened in the Dallas game. I'm like, huh, kind of like this.
Happened last Thursday.
I mean, happened it, last Thursday.
Last Thursday was a beatdown.
When it happens, look, you can take the 400-yard passing game, and they're really, you know, they're fun. Is there anything more satisfying than winning a game like the way the Bills did on Thursday night?
No, that was great. It was fantastic, and you hope that you can continue to see that. And honestly, you hope that Josh Allen continues to play smart. I think that's what they had in mind for him at the beginning of last season, and I know that because you saw Sean McDermott say it week one last season, play smart, be smart.
He played super smart, throwing the ball away. He checked down, and okay.
Week one, maybe not so much. Week one, diving over, hurdling over Buda Baker. You know, you do it because you know that's Josh Allen.
That's the end zone, but he's not hurling on what was a 3rd and 8 against the Jets.
That's right.
Right. And like, there's a time and a place for that. And, you know, if it's going to result in a touchdown, I think I'm okay with that.
Oh, I'm totally okay with it.
And Danger, there will be a game this year where we're going to say, Josh, why did you throw that ball? But this is the league. Every quarterback, we're going to say that. You just try to, like, have to limit all that. He brought up a good point about the Jaguars. These are the big boogeyman here. Like, he had to bring up the Tyrod game. Oh,
that was terrible.
Yeah, I
set playoff football back like 5 years. It was terrible.
You realize it was Peterman.
Yeah.
Peterman had the ball in Jaguar territory at the end of the game because Tyrod had been knocked out.
Yep.
That's how far we've come. But then to lose 9-6 to Urban Meyer they got pounded. They're not going to admit that, but the Bills got beaten down last year in London.
Mm-hmm.
After all they talked about, the preparation that went into that, you look unprepared in that game. So,
yeah.
So from that standpoint, a little extra rest, but ESPN throws up this graphic. I was actually kind of shocked. So Bills fans may remember there was a team in 1998, Wade Phillips, head coach, 0-3. Bills start out. They made the postseason. They end up losing to Miami. Okay. Since that point, how many teams that start out 0-3 actually make the postseason? I know the answer.
Is it percentage or is there a number?
No number. How many teams since the Bills in 1998?
I'm just going to guess. Can I guess?
Yeah.
I'm just going to say 6.
1.
1?
2018 Houston Texans.
Really?
Yeah.
Started 0-3,
yeah.
Made the postseason,
mm-hmm.
since the Bills did it in 98.
Yeah.
Wow. So 0-2 isn't death.
0-3
is pretty much death.
Now, this kind of comes with a big asterisk.
Oh, yeah,
now
you have the expanded.
And the, so really it's a little skewed.
The world is different now. But yes, that's interesting. And I think if you are one of those 0-2 teams, you know, especially when you're looking at that division, the AFC South.
Wait, right. Like if Houston beats Minnesota, you want to, you're Jacksonville, you're going to be 3 games back?
Mm.
Good luck.
If you're the Titans, you need a win. If you're the Colts hosting the Bears, you need a win desperately. Yeah, desperation in week three already. You can't start the season 0-3.
Or does Doug Peterson like, you know, I made my money.
I think about that too. Like, we spent some time last hour talking about the mess that is Carolina, and you know, Bryce Young not being happy with him being benched, and we trace it all to ownership and just a dysfunctional organization. Why is Jacksonville different? Like, Shad Khan feels like that kind of owner. He feels like the out of touch billionaire owner who thinks that he knows ball.
He's been outsourcing games for money. He's been doing his own thing for a long time down there, but because it's Jacksonville, it's like, eh.
Yeah, and if you're Doug Peterson, Trent Baalke, you're a couple of old school football guys, like, are you motivated to go out there and do it for that guy? To win games for that organization?
I'm just thinking out loud here. Like, if you were a first-time head coach and you're in this position, you're scared. You're scared assless. Like, wow, I'm going to get fired. I'm going to, like, if we start 0-3, 0-4, I can't afford this. And maybe this backfires, but maybe it gets you to sit up straighter and you get everybody. Or like, hey, I've been through this before.
Think about that.
And I'm going to be okay.
Think about that.
I've already made my money. I've won a Super Bowl.
I think it's fascinating to think about how owners and GMs and coaches deal with each other. Like, if you're a first-time GM, a first-time head coach, and you have to report to the billionaire owner, you're probably quaking a little bit, right? You're probably a little bit nervous to chest up the owner when you disagree with what they want to do. And you really have to work to develop that relationship to gain trust, right? Trust is the foundation of any good relationship. And you want to trust, if you're the billionaire owner, you want to trust the GM and the head coach. But if you don't see the results, mm-hmm. you do not. David Tepper right now does not trust his new head coach, Dave Canales. You're 0-2. Hey, brought you in here to win games. We obviously know there was no trust between Tepper and Frank Reich. One guy wanted one quarterback, the other one wanted the Bryce Young. Like, if you're Frank Reich, you probably do chest up the owner and say, Hey, I know what it takes. I've done this. Certainly Doug Peterson. I have a Super Bowl. I know what we're doing. You want to let me do it? Or are you going to continue to meddle? The comments that Shad Khan made were like, you don't need that. You don't need to hear that from the owner. You can say it behind closed doors and say, well, what are we doing here, guys?
You could say, hey, I'm excited about the season. I've got high expectations. But to say this is the best roster we've
had. You could say it behind closed doors to your head coach and your GM and say, guys, I'm nervous. We're 0-2. You won a Super Bowl. You put this great roster together. Why are we 0-2? It has to end now. That's a conversation you have behind closed doors. And then if you're the head coach and you want to chest him up because of whatever, for whatever reason, maybe if you're Doug Peterson, you could do it. But not if you're Dave Canales, not if you're a first-time NFL head coach or a younger guy. I think you'd be a little bit scared to chest up the owner, the evil billionaire owner. So fascinating.
Evil billionaire.
I do think, right, because all billionaires are evil. Don't you know, Gene? They shouldn't exist. They're aliens. We call them aliens for a reason, Gene. They're aliens, these alien owners.
Wait a second, I'm a self-made man, and all of a sudden, I can't be a billionaire anymore. Sorry, somebody said, sorry. We digress.
Happy Hour is next in the sports bar, and we got a lot to unpack from what we just talked about with Sal. And
stick to sports.
And PJ Glasser, the host of Send It In, gave us some best bets as well. The Bills, Sean McDermott speaking earlier today, the Bills back on the practice field.
We should, like, at some point, maybe, like, when we get our new batch of interns, like, go through all the audio. We'll rank the McDermott McLies of all time.
Yeah, this one might be a Hall of Fame entrance.
Yeah, this is a easy top five, maybe the greatest of all time.
Yeah, we'll get to that and more next. And a big move for St. Bonaventure University. We'll explain coming up next in Happy Hour on The Fan.
You're listening to The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia. On 95.7 FM and AM 950, The Fan Rochester.